Hi, you're listening to the Raise the Vibe with Liz podcast. I'm your host, Liz Peterson. I interview today's inspirational speakers and healers. Thank you for listening to the show. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Raise the Vibe with Liz. I'm your host, Liz Peterson, and today I have Rainey Shea joining me. Rainey Shea is a blogger and relationship coach. She earned her degree in social work 12 years ago and uses her education as well as all she has learned in her 13 years of marriage to help clients learn the conflict resolution skills needed to create an unbreakable bond with their partner. Rainey is the host of the annual Relationship Reboot Summit and a featured expert on the Manifest Love Show. Rainey's going to be talking about faith expansion today, and I'm really excited about this topic and hearing about her experience and her expansion. Rainey, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Excited to have you back. I really enjoyed having you in January. And at the end of our recording, you brought up this topic and how it's affected your life. And I thought it was a great topic to bring to the show. So welcome back. So glad to have you back. Let's jump right in. So what began your faith expansion and why do you call it that?
Yeah, so this is another one of those topics that I just really am passionate about and really love. So what began it? Well, going back, I was raised Mormon, right? Like in the mainstream LDS church. There's actually lots of different branches of belief systems that originated in that Joseph Smith movement. And I was part of the one that is the biggest. And so it's the mainstream LDS church. And I call it a faith expansion now, but lots of people have different words for it. And most commonly you hear if people are talking about something to do with Mormonism, they'll probably call it a faith crisis, right? And when people say faith crisis, they're generally talking about like they're in the faith and they're feeling a crisis of faith, like they're feeling some type of way about it and feel like they need to have some movement either further in, you know, they might be trying to get further in or dealing with leaving or whatever it is, but it feels very much like a crisis. Like inside your body and your mind, like especially with Mormonism, because it is an all-encompassing belief system and it's a way of life and it's a faith and it's all these things. And so when the belief system inside you starts to feel kind of like shaky or you learn things, it definitely feels like a crisis. And depending on how in you are in your life, how much of your life, you know, it is a crisis. And for me personally, it was my whole life since I was born, and I only left 6 years ago. So I have every stage in Mormonism, right? Like home, childhood, teenage. And then I went to college, to a Mormon college, and I met my husband in a Mormon temple, and we had children in the Mormon faith, and my oldest is baptized in the faith. So like, it was my whole life. And so it definitely can feel like a crisis, but eventually, and I obviously we can go into it deeper, but I now call it a faith expansion because I feel like for me, my whole world was like in this Mormon bubble. My whole faith was in there. And I feel like what I did was expanded outside of that out. And I expanded beyond the brackets that I was born into and given because it doesn't feel like a crisis anymore either. Like it's not a crisis. A crisis is so immediate and holds so much, the word itself even like holds so much energy of like just intensity, and that is not true for me anymore. And now I feel like my faith has just expanded to include so much more than what I ever held before, which is why I like to call it a faith expansion instead of a faith crisis. So
nice. Can you share a little bit the history of Mormonism? And you say mainstream LDS church. Can you define that for myself and our listeners?
Yeah. So Mormonism was founded actually not that long ago in the 1830s by a guy named Joseph Smith. And so on a scale for religions, right, on a global scale, it's actually a pretty fascinating movement because it's not that old, you know, because lots of religions on the earth that are thousands of years old, and Mormonism is not that. And so it's really fascinating. And there's actually lots of Mormon studies popping up in universities since probably the 90s, 80s, around there, because if you want to learn, just if you want to be able to look at a system socially and see, like, this is the birth of a religion, and then watch it grow to it now has like at least 3 million members worldwide. The numbers are a little dicey because it depends on how you count. I think they like to say like 16 plus, but there are also people who don't go anymore that they're still counting and whatever. There's a lot of nuance, I guess, in the numbers. But the important thing is it, when you're looking at it like this, is it a worldwide religion, and it does have millions of members all over the world. The reason I said, you know, like there's different branches is because, like most religions, you get these, like it starts as one, and then you get some kind of event that happens within the religion and people break off, right? Like that's how you end up with, you get Catholicism, and then you've got Protestants, and then you've got, you know, and then you break off into a million different types of Christianity. Mormonism is like that. Mormonism is just like that. Like you start off with Joseph Smith in the early 1830s, and for Mormons, a big part of their belief system is what they consider authority and God's authority and how you track where that authority goes. And in Mormonism, whenever they would come up against some kind of an event that brought into question, well, who actually has God's authority here? And there was different things that happened throughout the timeline as we're moving along. But then you would end up with people breaking off and saying, okay, no, I have the authority now. So this is, and another thing about Mormonism is that it's a belief system that believes that they're the one true church, right? God's one true church on earth. And so that really heightens that battle of like who has actual authority. Like, and so within the Mormon world, like that is the question if you're searching for what's the right answer. But that's how it ended up, is that you've got these different, so you have some of the two major, and I am not a Mormon scholar. I've done a lot of research on Mormon history because it was part of my faith journey, like a deep dive, because also Mormonism is a literal religion. And especially back when I was raised, like I was born in the 87. So the 90s and the early 2000s, that's my Mormon upbringing. And it is extremely literal. So everything that I'm taught is that it's literal history. And for me, because Mormonism was such a relatively new religion, that meant that I could dive in and do a lot of research, and there's still a lot of receipts. Where when you have things, you know, even Christianity, it's a couple thousand years old, like it makes it more difficult to find and authenticate sources. And, you know, but that's why for me and for most Mormons is because you're taught it's literal, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a big schism that happens when Joseph Smith dies, and he died in his 30s. So there's a big schism there, is like, oh, because Mormons are also believe they're led by God's one true prophet on earth. So a big schism happens when Joseph Smith dies, and it's like, well, now who's in charge? And so there was kind of like a group that stayed behind because they were currently in Missouri in the United States at the time. And there's kind of a group that stayed behind, and then a group that breaks off and follows a man named Brigham Young across the United States, where he goes and settles in Utah, which is what most people think of when you think of Mormons, you think of Utah. That's how that happened, is in Brigham Young University, Brigham Young University, Idaho. Like, those are all named after Brigham Young, right? So big schism happens there. But part of Mormonism was that they were practicing polygamy. Joseph Smith introduced polygamy as part of the belief, and it continued to be practiced until actually, so when Mormons left, they were actually leaving the United States. Like, the United States had not expanded all the way out yet, right? Like, it was Utah territory. It was, you know, like, it was Indian territory. It was, there was Mexico still up there. And so they actually left, and then the United States caught up, and they were like, polygamy, that's not something that we're going to do in the United States. And so there was a lot of tension and a lot of things back and forth that happened between the church as an institution and the United States government as an institution, and whether Utah is going to become a state or it's going to stay a territory, et cetera. And when the church finally decided to stop practicing polygamy, which was kind of a, it was not a like, and you can imagine, it was kind of a, like a gray area for a while, because you can imagine you've got families who are living this. And then all of a sudden they say, the prophet is like, okay, now we're not going to do that. Well, then what about the families who are still doing it? But it is such, like, polygamy is such an integral part of the doctrine of Mormonism, whether you are currently practicing it or not, that was another big schism that happened, because it's so wrapped up. It's so wrapped up in the belief system that when that happened, there was a lot of people who felt that the church had fallen away, right, from God's plan. And they were like, okay, no, this mainstream church is wrong now. And then there was other people who were like, no, we're still going to practice polygamy, and I have God's authority, and this is why. And so splintering happened there. And there are still Mormons who practice. That's, you know, and there are some big groups, but they all have different names. People often think of the FLDS, and especially because of Warren Jeffs and all that happened there, and that became famous. But that's not the only group at all, because there were several splinterings that happened there. So yeah, that's kind of like a big overview of like the Mormon movement and how it happened like that.
I have a couple questions. So you said polygamy is intertwined in the faith. Can you define mm-hmm. that for us? Like, how is it intertwined in the faith?
So this is a pretty hot topic. As you can imagine, right? And what people are going to say about it obviously completely depends on which branch of Mormonism they were raised in and what they think and feel about it. But for me, coming from the mainstream church, from the main one, like, even though Mormons are not currently practicing polygamy, if you know someone who is LDS, who's a member, you know, of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, even though they're not currently practicing, Mormons hold an eternal view of the soul, and they have a plan, you know, that like starts from before we're born until after, and polygamy is wrapped up in that. And if you go back and you look at the origins of Mormonism and what they were taught about polygamy, is that the main idea of Mormonism is that we're all spirit children of God. We come here to earth, we get tested, and then depending on how we do in this test, we get awarded or rewarded, or, you know, with a different, Mormons have different levels essentially of heaven. They call them kingdoms, but, you know, there's different levels there, and there's a place for people who deny Christ, deny the Holy Ghost. It's not like hell in that there's like fire and brimstone, but it's like considered out, you know, it's called outer darkness. You're cast out, etc. And how polygamy wraps into that. Oh, and before I say that, the point is you are trying to become like God, because the belief is that that's your next, like, that's your next step, right? Like, here you have this earth life and you're growing as a soul, but the goal is to become so much like God that then you get to experience what Godhood is and is like, and you get to move on and become a God and create your own world and et cetera. And it's wrapped into that because when Joseph Smith introduced it, he said, well, you know, this is, I have this revelation from God, and God says that polygamy is my way. And so men and Mormons also do sealings in the temple. They seal themselves and they believe that the things that they do, the ordinances that they do here on earth, like, hold through the eternities. And so, like, when you get married here, you're getting married forever. And Joseph Smith introduced it in this way of like, polygamy is God's way. So men are meant to have more than one wife, and the wives are meant to be like, it just sounds so, every time I try to explain it to someone, it's like, damn, this stuff is so out there. But the wives are just meant to be there to be like a helpmeet to their husband and help him, you know, like, you build this, the idea is that you're going to build this with your husband, because the implication is that God is also polygamous, and that's just how God is. And, but people will come up with like different explanations that they'll teach that aren't necessarily like rooted in some prophet's thing. Like, people would kind of, it's like whispered about that God has more than one wife, our God, like Heavenly Father God, you know, has more than one wife, and this earth that we're on is all the children of one of those wives, but God has multiple earths with multiple wives. And sorry, I can, and so if you're trying to be like God, you know, if you're trying to be like God, then polygamy is the way to do it. And the other reason that part of that comes through is Joseph Smith looked at the Old Testament, and polygamy is practiced in the Old Testament. And so that was part of the like thinking, was like, because that's another part of the authority. Mormons believe that there's this chain of authority that happened. And so, you know, they believe that Moses and Noah and all those Old Testament prophets were part of God's chain of authority and plan. And some of them, lots of them, were practicing polygamy. It was part of the culture back then. But Mormons, part of the belief is that the prophet can't lead the church astray. He can't, he won't make a mistake in something that he's proclaiming for the church. And so, you look at the old prophets and you're like, well, they did it, so it must be part of God's plan. And on my personal belief is Joseph Smith was like, and I want to do that.
Right.
You know, like, depends on who you ask, whether that was actually God's plan or not. I personally think he just wanted to. I think that he, and I feel like there's a lot of proof that he was into just taking whoever he wanted, whenever he wanted, and saying, you're my wife now. But that's a separate thing. But the thing is, the way Mormonism is set up, even though they don't practice anymore, because essentially the US government came in and said, look, you either stop doing this, or we're going to jail all your men, and we're going to confiscate all your property. and your money. And so they just forced it, you know. But you can't disavow the practice because it was built into the doctrine like that. Like when you go into the temple, you're promising to be a priestess unto your husband for the wedding ceremony. And like, there's so much language that it's built in. And with something that huge, if they were to go in and say, no, that's not doctrinal, well, it's written in so much that then you open a can of worms, because then you have people going, wait, he was the founding prophet, and that's not true. What he said isn't true. Like, it's so big that they can't disavow it on the global picture, or not global, on the long, you know, eternal picture. They can say, we're not practicing it now. They can say, not everybody will be required to practice it after they die. But they can never say that it's not part of God's plan, because if they do that, then it all topples, because that's how Mormonism is built, right? Like, the idea is supposed to be that each prophet builds, and God gives more light and knowledge to each prophet as we go along, so that we're led by God currently, and, you know, God has a plan for us here, but it's supposed to build. And that's not really how it works when you dive in, but there's only so many, it's like a Jenga tower. There's only so many of these old pieces that are not good anymore. Like, they originally used to ban Black men from the priesthood, and Black people were banned from entering the temples. Like, that's a piece that old prophets taught that obviously now is not acceptable. And so it's those issues that they've tried to pull out of that Jenga tower, and they try to kind of skirt around it come up with excuses of why would God's prophets teach and say these awful things now that we culturally know better. And polygamy is one of those that it's like, you can't pull it out completely and disregard it and abandon it completely. Cause if you do, it brings up too many questions. Mm-hmm. So, and they still practice it with their paperwork, because Mormons are big record keepers. And so a man is allowed to be sealed to more than one woman, just not at a time. So there are lots of people that, like, they're married, their spouse dies. If it's a man and his wife dies, he can be sealed to another woman. And then the belief is that that marriage, the first marriage and the second marriage, are still valid after they die. But if it's a woman whose husband died, she can get married again, but she can't be sealed again. And then after she dies, she's going to be with whoever she was sealed to. Like, it's so in depth. It's so interesting because it's so different, which is why I can totally see why Mormon studies is a thing. And then also that's part of why I have a blog, right? That I write only about my life experiences, mm-hmm. and Mormon topics, because, and I warned you, like, before we hit record, like, I was like, I can go so in depth, and there is so much there when it comes to the nitty gritty of the Mormon system and how it works now, currently, things they're doing currently, the nitty gritty of the history. There are just wild stories. Like, they say, reality or whatever is stranger than fiction. Like, if it's Mormonism, yeah. It is so interesting, and the stories are crazy, you know, so there's all of that you can dig into. And then for me personally, I also dig into my personal experiences in Mormonism in the blog. And that's why I do it, is just because it's like, there's so much rattling around in my head that the blog is a really great way for me to, like, write it and get it all out there.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that. You definitely enlightened me as to the hierarchy and painting God as authority, but also painting the man who started as authority. And then he was proving authority from previous scriptures to prove what he was saying was correct, along with the patriarchy.
Yes. It's a very patriarchal
and
system.
Racism.
Yeah. Yeah. Racism, yeah. There's just so much there. So much there. For me personally, like thinking about what you asked earlier of like, how did this start for you? So being raised in the church, about the time I was 13, I remember, and I've actually kept a journal since I was 8 continuously. So I can go back and look at what I was thinking and feeling at the time. And about the time I was 13 was when I got super boy crazy and started to feel, you know, like think about all these like getting married and whatever. And then also because, especially in the 90s, it was like so focused on for girls ages 12 to 18. Like there's a lot that's taught, but how to prepare to be a wife and a mother, that's most of the instruction, if not all.
I'm sure.
Like that is the focus, right? And that was definitely what I was always taught, was like, this is why I'm here on earth as a woman. I am here to find a husband, get married, and raise children to be the best Mormons possible. But when I was 13, I remember asking, well, what about like, because I was thinking about eternal marriage, and there was always lessons on getting married in the temple is so important. And I asked this question, well, what about people who don't get married in the temple? Are they not going to be married after they die? And it was like, no, they're not. They're going to be single. And that's why the vow is till death do us part, because other people part when they die. And Mormons don't say that. Mormons believe they'll stay married. But I was like, but also Mormons do work for the dead by proxy in their temples, which sounds kind of creepy, but maybe it's just that way. It's not necessarily, I don't really see it as creepy. Like it just like, I don't know. It just is. It's like their way of, if everybody has to follow the same rules in life, then how do you explain people who die and never hear about Mormonism? Oh, well, we've got that covered, because we can take a person who's alive and we can do all their ordinances for them in the temple. And we just like say, oh, I'm doing this for so-and-so. And then you go and do it, right? So they were like, well, after they die, they can have their temple work done, and they can, if they accept this, if they become Mormon, even after they die, then God will let them be married forever. But that really bothered me, because I just was like, but not everybody does that. Like not everybody believes. And my sweet 13-year-old heart, like could not picture, like I was just picturing this epic love that people have, right, for each other and for their spouse. And I was like, but what if they just don't believe that part of the Mormon story that eventually developed is Joseph Smith says he saw God in a vision. And I'm like, what if they just don't believe that some 14-year-old kid saw God? What if they don't believe that? Is God still going to take their family away? Is he still going to say, no, you're not married anymore? And you're not, and part of that too is being sealed to your kids. Like I'm my kid's mom and I'm sealed to them as their mom. And if I don't go through the temple and uphold all that, then that bond is broken and taken away. And the answer was like, well, yeah, that's the consequence. And I just, it didn't sit well with me. I didn't like it. It was upsetting. It was so upsetting. And I had already also started to really develop like a lot of perfectionism and a lot of self-hate. I mean, I wrote some pretty nasty things about myself starting when I was 10 in my journal, like just so much I felt like I was never good enough. And it really just, it grew from there, right? Like that's how it started. So for some people, they get smacked in the face with some kind of information that does not fit the narrative that the church teaches its members. Because that's the thing. Your average members, your average Mormons, when you meet them, they do not know the real history of their own church. They are not given that information. They are given only things that are faith promoting within Mormon structure. And they're given so much to read and do within the system that, and especially before the internet, before TikTok, before whatever, like you kind of had to seek it out. It wasn't, you couldn't easily stumble across this stuff. Now it's different, but back then, you know, and so you're just so busy consuming what the church is giving you and trying your best to. Mormonism is also like, you're constantly have this list of stuff you're supposed to be doing, supposed to be being, like the time commitment is astronomical. It is not a Sunday only religion. Mm-hmm. And most of them just don't know this stuff. And now it's more common for people to come across information that doesn't fit the narrative that they've been given, and for them to have kind of like this, Mormons use the phrase a shelf breaker moment, because there's a phrase in Mormonism where you run across something that doesn't make sense or feel right, and they'll say, well, just put it on a shelf and leave that, like focus on your faith, put on a shelf, leave that for God to take care of later, and mm-hmm. just put it on a shelf, right? And so then people will be like, well, what was your shelf break? And that's the way it happens for some people, is like they get smacked across the face with something that either like some new policy that doesn't jive with their belief system, or some kind of historical fact, or something happens, and then people will do a deep dive and like everything comes apart in a weekend. That happens to so many people because it's all out there and it's so accessible now that like it is just, there's so much, there's so many people online, there's mm-hmm. podcasts and TikToks and blogs, and there's just so many people sharing their stories that you can do that, and you can absolutely have the tower fall in a weekend. But for me, that wasn't my story, because that was not available for me. Like, one, I was like, I don't know, it makes me feel old, but it's like the internet, like it wasn't this thing that everybody used, especially not when I was a kid. We didn't even have the internet, like, you know what I mean? And then when I was a teenager, it was like, oh, you pop on and do a tiny bit of research and then you pop off and that's it, mm-hmm. you know? And so for me, I started having internal questions and internal feelings of like this does not fit how I feel inside. Mm-hmm. But I didn't learn anything that didn't fit like historically until later. I ended up, I was really depressed in high school. I had some pretty traumatic things happening, and I started seeing a therapist. And the therapist was actually in the process of leaving the Mormon church. And so she gave me just a little tiny tidbit of something to look up. And she was like, she said, have you ever heard of Masons and Masonry? And I was like, no. And at this time I was 16 by then. And she's like, look up Joseph Smith and the Masons. And what she was referring to was that Joseph Smith was a Mason, and that he became a second degree Mason. It was something like 3 months or something before he introduced the Mormon temple ceremony. And the original Mormon temple ceremony was over 60% identical to the Masonic ceremony that Masons, you know, many Masons are still doing today. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's pretty evident of like him being very, very influenced by right. becoming a Mason. Some Mormons who know about that, they have theories or ways to explain it away. But for me, that was the first thing was that. But I didn't do a deep dive until college because I didn't really have the availability. And then also Mormons are so warned against any material that does not come from the church. And these tendencies, this Mormonism gets accused of being a cult. Right. And cult is a pretty strong word. It carries a lot of feelings with it that people have. And this is why is, and I feel like, I don't know, it's either a super mild religious cult or a super culty religion. That's kind of like where I land is I'm just like, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me if I label it that or not. It just is what it is. Mm-hmm. But part of the reason they get accused of this kinds of stuff is because of how much control the authority figures have. And then also because like you're warned all the time to beware of anti-Mormon literature and where are you getting your information and only get it from this source that we're giving you. And
well, if you look outside, then you're going to start questioning.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I was
started
really
doing
scared
into with your intuition early on.
Right. Early on, it was just my feelings, yeah. But I was so scared of being like, and they'll say, oh, Satan will deceive you. And it'll sound so like they'll warn you that even the very elite are going to fall away and you have to be so careful. And like, there's just so much fear around
like one
looking.
Single person could be the demise to the whole entire religious faith.
Yeah. Like there's just so much fear. So I looked it up a tiny bit when I was still at home, but it's like the family computer and I don't have access to anything else. And I can't really do a deep dive into other sources around my family. But then once I got to college and I did go to a church school, but the interesting thing is that because I was on a church owned campus, they had all of these old books just in the library of like these books that showed what these original prophets were actually teaching, original prophets in the Mormon church. Right. So once I got to college, then I started doing researching, and I would come across these blogs that were pretty obscure at the time. Like now there's now it's all over, you know, like now people like the church has done something called the Joseph Smith Papers Project, where they've actually put on their website pictures of papers that Joseph Smith has written and stuff. Like there's so much more available now. Mm-hmm. And so it's like people can hyperlink now, right? Like where in the church eventually they did put out some essays to try and combat this loss of members they're having. So now it's like when you get on now, people can have hyperlinks in their notes and different things like that that can source you just straight to, which is why it's so much easier now to do thorough research online. But when I was in college, it wasn't like that. It was like I was so like hyper scared of being fooled and was so like, oh, I have to make sure it's correct, that I would read something and then I would write down all the notes, like the sourced notes in a notebook. And they were all these books that were sourced, these old books. And then I would go to the library on campus and spend hours in the stacks double checking the sources manually, right? And what I discovered was that I could usually tell what was an out and out lie and what was just like, or what was something that was so twisted that it just wasn't true, you know? Because I was raised in the church. So it was like, I knew that when somebody said something like Mormons are performing ceremonies on children in basements, which was something I read, like, I was like, okay, well, I know that's not true, but I also know why they're saying that. Like, because Mormon youth can go to the temple when they're 12, but they're only allowed to go to different, like a specific spot in the temple called the baptistry, where they have a baptismal font and stuff. And usually that baptistry is the underground level of the temple, right? And so technically it's the basement. But when you say, but all they're doing, it's like five steps down and there's a mural. You can look it up online. Like the church itself posts pictures of what the baptistry looks like in the temple. And it's like, there's murals and there's a big, essentially a massive bathtub on the back of 12 oxen that 12-year-olds go in and they're baptized over and over again for dead people. And then they're done and they go to a locker room that looks like a gym locker room with stalls and lockers and keys, like, you know, and then they get dressed and then they leave. And it's like, you can make that sound really creepy. I mean, it's different. It's really odd. It's not, nobody else is doing that. But that's not the same thing to me as saying Mormons are performing ceremonies on children in basements. Like, you see the difference there? And so I felt like I could tell. Like, there was stuff that I read that I was like, is this true or not? Because this is wild. That, like, past prophets had said, or things like that, that I was like, that can't be true. Like Brigham Young taught at one point that Adam, like Adam and Eve, Adam was actually God, like Heavenly Father God. He actually did teach that. That was the kind of thing that I was like, that can't be true, because that's not what the church teaches or mentions at all, right? Those were the kinds of things that I was looking up, because I was like, that can't be true. Brigham Young never taught that. Let me look and see if that's true. Oh, that is true. He actually did teach that. But things like they're performing ceremonies on kids in basements, that kind of thing, I was like, no, I know that that's, I know what it's referring to. I know the spirit that it's being done in. And I know that it's not dark and creepy. It's just different. And so I learned that way. And then that researching continued little by little, literally until I left, because Mormonism is such a deep dive. Like, we're already at 50 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm. It goes so fast, like, because there is so much there that I was just desperate to, I wanted to build my testimony of this church. That's why I was doing it. I wasn't out looking to try and prove that it's not true. I started out trying to quiet the questions and discontent in my own heart, and then finding things that was not what I had been taught, and going, wait, can that be true? And then, like, diving in. And then the more you dive in, the more it just comes to pieces, because it's literal, right? Because that's what the church system sits on. It is not like it is a literal base. Like, yes, you have faith in God, you have faith in Christ, but there are pieces of it that are faith-based, but all your faith is sitting on a literal foundation of these things literally happened, you know? And so I spent years diving into different topics of Mormonism that was like, ooh, I don't know how I feel about this. This doesn't make sense. This doesn't feel good. And then I would just research and research and research. And it just kept piling up for me, like kept piling up.
So would you consider this in your blog, on your homepage there, you talk about that taking it apart. Would this be mm-hmm. what you consider your religious deconstruction, as you word it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So the blog, so I have the blog set up specifically. I try to do it to make it easy for people to navigate, but then also so that they can engage in the way they want to engage. Because like we didn't even get a chance to talk about like the relational piece of what that looked like as I'm moving through being married to a Mormon man, being daughter of Mormon parents, like all that stuff, right? And one of the things that I learned through that, because all of my family is Mormon, my husband is not anymore, but we did do a mixed faith marriage for 4 years. He was still in while I was out. And so we did do that too. And what I learned was sometimes people just don't want to know. They just don't want to know. They don't want to know because there's some pretty hard to swallow facts that are just facts. And that's the other thing is like at one point my mom was like, you're reading anti-Mormon literature. And I was like, Mom, it's not anti-Mormon if it's just a fact of history. What I think and feel and decide about it is different from the fact that it is just a fact. Like Joseph Smith married in polygamy a girl who was a few months away from her 15th birthday. That is a fact. That is a fact of history. What you think about that, how you feel about it, what you decide that means for your faith life is separate from the fact that it just is, right? But what I learned was through these relationships with my family who are still active believing members was that sometimes they don't want to know. They don't want to know those hard stories. They don't want to know. They don't want to know. And so I set the blog up so that if you're interested in learning about the history, then read the Taking It Apart section. Or if you're interested in the current, and it's not completely current, because I haven't done deep research now for a while. Like my deep research, probably 2018 was when I quit diving deep, right? Now it's more of a peripheral thing, but essentially it's set up that way so that you, if you want to read about deconstruction and you want to read about my opinions about that stuff. So I set it up. So it's like, here's the facts. Here's what I was taught Mormons believe and how that what I was given and what they still believe. And then here's my opinions on it. But if you're not interested in reading that piece and you only want to read about my personal story and about how I navigated trauma, bullying, major trauma in high school around like a queer relationship that I had that was wild, or depression, or marriage, or motherhood, or mental health. Like if you want to read more about that, then that is the life section of the book or of the blog, excuse me. And I try really hard I don't dive into like how many wives Joseph Smith had and how old they were. And, you know, like I don't go into that in that section for people who don't want to read that stuff. And then there's a part, the section I call Put It Together. And that is all faith promoting. And so that piece is about what I considered like my expansion. Like those are the things in there that were helpful to me because I was hurting so much. Mormonism has a lot of pain. It is very hard. If you decide to stay, it's hard. If you decide to leave, it's hard. It is really hard. And the put it together piece is all the stuff that was helpful to me, was soothing to me in those hard moments. And then like the things that I found out, and I'm still currently writing the blog. It's not completed. There's so much that I want to write still, but like it's dedicated to the things that I found that were helpful and uplifting. But I have people who aren't interested in that either, right? Like some people leave Mormonism and they leave a faith life behind and they really don't care about my current experiences with spirit. Like they don't care about that. They're not interested in that. They're only interested in current events, or they're only interested in whatever. So that's why I break the blog up that much. It's just so that people can really tailor it to wherever they're at.
Nice. I also saw that, and I want to know, you also said you found it helpful and comforting during your spiritual reconstruction that you were inspired by your pioneer ancestors. Can you explain that and how they inspired you and where you are today on your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a great place to go. Because it's positive. It's uplifting. Like, I love that. I love that. Because when I think about, my roots run deep in Mormonism, really deep. Like, if you think about, you have four grandparents generally, right? Biological grandparents, like all four branches coming in are Mormon branch. And I have ancestors that go back 7-9 generations, because I've also done genealogy work and dived into some of those stories of my ancestors to really figure out, like, how did this happen? How did this Mormon journey happen? How did I land in this Mormon soup? And so it's really deep, right? I mean, I have one ancestor that was converted by Joseph Smith himself. And they came down from Canada to be with Mormons, to live with Mormons. But when I think about the Mormon story and I think about pioneers, to me, I choose to think about it as inspirational, because there was a time when it made me sad, because I felt like Joseph Smith was manipulative and a con artist. He took advantage of so many people. And there's a lot of ugliness there. And so there was a time when I thought about it and I was just like, oh, I felt bad. But then I decided that it's more helpful to me to think about what their experience was in that moment. And of course, it's in general, right? Because we're talking about hundreds of people once you get, when you're talking generationally. But when I think about my Mormon ancestors, I think they followed their faith and they did hard things, really hard things, like leaving your home and immigrating to America to follow your faith, something that they believed in so strongly. They believed in this story and in this religion and what it had to offer so strongly that many of them gave up and sacrificed so much over and over, not just to, you know, leave Canada or leave England and come to the Eastern United States, but then I come from the branch that followed Brigham Young across the United States and went to Utah. And when you think about like what that was like, these people were walking or in covered wagons. Like, that's dedication. That is something big. And despite the fact that I feel like the stories that were being taught and told were not the truth, the faith that they had in their God and what they believed God wanted from them was big. And it was big enough that they acted on it. You know, they molded their entire lives around this. And then, like, when you look at polygamy, I've done deep dive into polygamy. 16 of my direct line ancestors practiced polygamy. Like, and so that's just grandparents, 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 right? Not aunts and uncles, none of that, just straight up the line. Polygamy is hard. There's a lot of, I think, especially because I'm so fascinated by relationships and I love relationships, right? I'm a relationship coach. And so that piece of like, how did they make that work is so interesting to me. But they did, and they did it for their belief. And so that's why I feel like connected. And that's where I make that parallel between me, and I feel like what I'm doing now honors them. And people who are still in the church would likely completely disagree with me. They'd be like, yeah, they gave everything for this religion and you threw it out the window. But I don't see it that way. I see it as they molded their life around their faith, and in every way, you know, in a big way. And it was, there were so much unknowns. Like, Mormonism is such a new religion, and they went for something that was new and unknown. And then they made life choices based on that. That's big. They didn't have generations and generations of stories of people who had lived the exact same way. Like, they chose this thing. And that's how I see myself, is I feel like now I'm coming from a place of all my generations are Mormon, you know, and most of my current relationships are Mormon. My family, most of them are Mormon. The majority of them are. And Mormonism was all I ever knew. And it was all I ever wanted. Like, I wanted to make it work. I wanted to make it fit, but it just didn't. And I felt so called for something beyond. But it is so scary, Liz. Like, it is doing that, making that choice to step outside your comfort zone and answer an internal call that you feel strongly about is beautiful and terrifying at the same time. And almost all the time, I feel like I'm just winging it. I don't have anybody who gave me an example of how to live a faith life outside of something that was so structured and packaged and just given, right? Like, that's what Mormonism is. It's just like, here's everything you need. And I don't have that anymore. And so that's why I say that, is I just feel like I'm really honoring that spirit in me that says, I'm going to follow my God, my beliefs, my intuition, to the best of my ability, into something that I don't know what it looks like perfectly. And I'm just doing it because I have this internal like fire inside of me that says, this is what you need to do. And I actually, what it's like now, I know we're out of time, so I need to wrap it up. But it's funny because I had a conversation with a friend about this just yesterday, about my belief system now, because, and where it's expanded to, and like, how, what does that look like practically, right? From a practical sense. Because what my belief system looks like now is, I believe in souls. I believe that I didn't just poof exist when my body started to form in my mom's womb. And I don't believe that I'm just going to go poof and be no more after I die. I believe that I am a soul on a soul journey inside of a physical body. And I believe that everybody else in the world is too. I absolutely believe in energy. I believe in positive energy, negative energy, but more like high energy, low energy. I believe in growth and expansion. Like, I really think that this life is so short, but so potent. Like, the life that we're living here on Earth is so potent. It's intense. It's like everything about it is intense. And I feel like even just looking at how much I've changed and grown, I'm just continually becoming more and more of who my soul is, but I'm also learning so much about everybody around me. And I think that that's what it's about, is an opportunity to learn and grow in a big way. And I don't know anymore, like, very concrete things, you know, like, what does heaven look like? What does hell look like? Who is this God? Is this God person or not, or whatever? But I absolutely believe in spirit, and spirits and things like that. And I believe in love and the power of love, that that is amazing and potent. And I know how I feel inside. I know that my soul and my spirit lights up when I get to have conversations like this one. I get to have conversations with people about things that matter. And it might be religion or spirit or not. It might be trying to recover from different addictions. It might be relationships and the relationship with your partner. It could be any of those things. Like, there's different facets, but when I have deep connective conversations, to me, that is something that is spiritual. That's a moment. That's a connection piece. Cause I don't see people as, like, I think we're all connected. We're individuals, but we're also very connected, you know? And that's the piece that I have to tap into when I want to access feelings of expansiveness and faith and spirituality in a concrete sense. Because I grapple with, like, how much is there an interventionist God or not? That's like my current question that I'm like, I don't know. You know, I think about it and I'm like, I don't know, because as an empath, there's so much pain in the world, so much pain. And it just, and I just go, if there was a God who stepped in all the time and intervened, then it sure looks like this God is doing a crappy job because everybody's hurting. So I don't know if I can go there, but I also, when I swing to the other side, I think, if I let myself go, oh, well, there is no God. Well, that feels absolutely heartbreaking and terrifying, you know? So it's like, I don't know concrete things anymore like that, but I do feel like when I'm low, when I'm struggling, which I kind of am, to be perfectly honest, like, I'm kind of like going through some stuff personally that I want to get through. How do I tap into faith and a faith life? Well, how I do that is by tapping into this, this feeling of connectiveness and love and humanity, and like, I help you and you help me, and we can't do it alone, like that kind of thing. That's what it looks like for me personally, my faith life personally. I do have, my husband and I have come up with some structure for our kids, because we've got three kids, and kids have a hard time with, you know, less concrete things. And so we do spend time on Sundays doing very structured things with the kids around things like values and health and that kinds of stuff. But it's like there's that piece as a mentor role, as a mother role, and then there's the other piece as a faith role. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you, Rainey.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Spiritual journey. What is a jewel of wisdom that you would like to leave our listeners with today?
I don't know if it's necessarily wisdom, but I would definitely just offer encouragement, because there are so many times in my life between faith crisis journey, between depression and anxiety battles and relationship struggles. And there's just so much. And there's so many times where it just felt like life was just really hard. And I didn't know if I could just keep doing it. And I remember those times, there would be an interview I'd see online or something I would read where someone would say, just keep moving, was essentially the message, right? And I feel like that is sometimes what we need, is just that encouragement of like, just keep trying, just take one step. Just sometimes you have to like pull in and just look at what's right in front of you, because it can get so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But if you just do what is the next right thing, right? That's what they say in AA. Just do the next right thing. Just look at that. Like, just keep trying. Even if where you're going or what you're trying doesn't end up being your thing, if you're in movement, it's easier to stay in movement. And that will lead to stuff. That will lead to something new, as opposed to isolation and just being stuck. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say, is just keep trying, just keep reaching. It's hard. And anybody can always contact me. I love people. Like, people are the best, very worst, but they also can be so amazing and the best. And this is like, it's one of those things that I'm really, passionate about, is, and I have multiple ways, I'm all over social media. I don't have a big like following, but once you find me, Rainey Shea, it's Rainey.Shea everywhere. Like, my DMs are open, my email address is out there. Like, it's, my comments are on, like, it's, I'm always happy to step in and serve people however I can.
Thank you, Rainey. And how do people get a hold of you? It's Rainey.Shea on social media. And what is your website again? Mm-hmm.
So my website for my business is www.raineyshaecoaching.com. And it's RAINISHAE for your podcast listeners. And my blog is www.rockymountainrain.blog. And and then on social media, if you just search Rainey.Shea, I pop up. My Instagram is literally has one post right now. Like, it's a baby feed. I just barely decided to do that. And my TikTok was my personal account, and I literally just decided, like, yeah, okay, I'll throw up some other stuff on there that might be helpful. So it's there. It's not, like, if you want to find content heavy material for me, go to my business website or my blog. If you just want to find me and interact with me, anywhere's fine. I'm pretty responsive.
Thanks, Rainey. Thanks for joining me. Mm-hmm. It's such fascinating information. And thank you for giving us a glimpse into Mormonism and your experience to where you are right now. I appreciate your time, Rainey. Thanks for joining me again.
Well, thanks for letting me just talk. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rainey. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. This is Liz Peterson, and This is Raise the Vibe with Liz. Remember to get out there and raise the vibe. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to today's show on Raise the Vibe with Liz. If you like this content and want to support me, please go to Patreon at Raise the Vibe with Liz or click the link in the description of this show. And remember, change starts with you. So get out there and raise the vibe. Thank you, everyone.